We've already talked about two dimensions. One is the financial dimension. One is power with respect to the communication link. And the third dimension is energy. And if you remember, I talked about one of the key constraints we have in sensor network design is the lifetime of the energy supply or the batteries. So energy is extremely important. So we tend to think a lot about an energy budget and its relationship to battery lifetime, or looking ahead to the future, how the energy requirement of a sensor relates to the ability to scavenge or harvest energy from the environment. And this includes classical things like solar energy, may include wind energy, may include the energy that you can extract from temperature differences or vibration. But in any case, you need to understand what the energy budget is for a sensor network. Now, just to think about this in a little bit more detail, let's talk about, go back to the idea of who's controlling the activity. And this was, remember, our embedded system. And basically what's going to happen is that the sensor network node is going to be in different states. And some of the states are a communication state, a sleep state, and various states in which it's taking measurements, maybe doing system maintenance. There may be startup, shutdown, etc., etc. So with respect to these states, let's take a look at how we can get a handle on relating the activities of the sensor network to the energy cost of actually running a node, what that means in terms of battery lifetime. Here is a very simple model of a sensor network energy budget. Obviously, we have a total energy here, and energy means that we need to look at power times time, or power integrated over time, and power says we need to think about voltage and current. We have a fixed supply voltage here, and we have some time interval here. And notice we have Q sub S, Q sub C, and Q sub H. That's for sample, or taking a measurement, communication, and hibernation. So we think of these quantities, Q sub S, Q sub C, and Q sub H, as adding up to 1. So they reflect the percentage of time that the sensor node is in each of those activity states. Now, in these activity states, it's going to consume different amounts of current. And obviously, the lowest amount of current is consumed when you're hibernating, and typically it takes about 500 times the amount of current to sample than it does to hibernate, and it takes about 1,000 times as much energy to communicate as to hibernate. And these numbers, these currents, are based on the hardware technology. Now, so there are two strategies to minimize energy consumption. One is to go after the hardware, and that's to come up with more efficient processes, more efficient architectures. And second, we have software level design strategies, and those relate to the percentage of time we're in these different states or modes. And so what this points out is that what you'd like your sensor node to do most often is hibernate, because it takes the least energy. So if you can come up with schemes that allow it to hibernate more, but still meet all the goals of what it's trying to do, then it's going to be a better design. So now we've talked about energy, and that is the third dimension now we've talked about. We've talked about power, we've talked about money, and now we've talked about energy. One final thing. This is a very simple model. And I want to write in big letters here, beware of simple models. They're great ways to start, but here's the deal. The assumption of a model like this is that the energy that you use is ultimately determined just by how often you're in a particular state. It is saying that it doesn't cost anything to change states. But in fact, there are warm-up and shutdown costs and transition costs that come into play. These are transient energy costs. For example, when you turn on a radio, you have to wait for the oscillators to warm up and settle down so that they're at the right frequency. So you have to look at more complex models of the activity of the sensor to really understand how to optimize the energy use. If we look a little bit more about improving energy efficiency, we can split this up. And the first thing we can look at is the embedded systems aspect. And by that, I mean wirelessly networked embedded systems. So this includes all the componentry, including the radio. So the first goal here is a hardware-related goal, and it's basically saying, make sure that if an electronic component, even down to a specific gate or a specific stage of an amplifier, uses the minimum amount of energy to do its job, that's a good thing. So this is a very hardware-oriented thing, and we can do that by optimizing process technologies in all aspects, digital, analog, RF, and mixed signal. And we can also do things to improve power regulation and management. There's a huge amount of engineering expertise that goes into power, specifically voltage regulation, very different technologies to do that, that are very important in terms of the overall energy efficiency of the system. The second aspect is a software-oriented aspect, and that is if you have a system that allows you to optimize its power consumption, then you need to have the smarts in your software to do that. And you can do that by exploiting clock domains in the hardware. This is where you gate the clock to different domains at different clock rates, and obviously you want to turn the clock off entirely if a subsystem, a hardware subsystem such as a peripheral, is not being used, because as we know, in digital CMOS, most of the energy used is at clock edges when we actually have switching. Even more powerfully, we can use power domains, and the idea here is simply to depower subsystems of chips or subsystems of circuits that aren't being used, so we can actually gate the power on and off. And finally, now we're starting to see in the embedded world dynamic voltage scaling, And this is where you tune the voltage to minimize the power consumption in a particular state. Now, as I've indicated, communication takes most of the energy in most wireless sensor networks. And this is because it just simply takes a lot of energy to run the RF components needed to transmit and receive information wirelessly. Now, you might think most of the energy is used in the power amplifier on the transmitter side, and much of it is, but you'd be surprised to know that receiving using a modern single chip radio takes maybe half as much energy, and you would think it would be a lot less. But the primary reason for that is that you have a low noise amplifier, which also takes energy, but also these radios use a direct digital synthesizer to allow frequency agility, and these synthesizers take a lot of energy. So the bottom line here is that the communication aspect, the wireless communication, is a big energy consumer. So it makes sense to think about how to optimize it. And basically, there are two simple ways we can think about doing this. First of all, we minimize useless radio operation. And the idea here is that you don't want to waste energy transmitting when there is no one to receive, or listening when there's no one transmitting, and in particular, no one that's relevant to your needs. So we want to use communication energy only when actually transmitting or receiving data. You don't want to be sitting there with either your transmitter or receiver on unless it's being used. So once you've done that, the next step of optimization is to only communicate what is necessary. And here we say transmit only what is necessary to solve the problem of model data inference. And this is really getting back to the what do we do with the data aspect. In other words, we're trying to build knowledge, and to do that, we're trying to build models. And so we want to make sure that the transmitted data is truly informative. And two aspects of that are the data is redundant, and we need to understand how to use source coding techniques to minimize redundancy, but also we want to probably use channel coding to protect that data. So there are two steps here. One is we want to make sure that the radio is on only when it is doing something useful, i.e. transmitting or receiving. And we also really care that the information that we're transmitting and receiving is actually useful or informative. In this course, we're focusing on a particular application for wireless sensor networks, and that is the environmental or ecosystems monitoring application. So one of the questions that comes up is, well, how general is this? If we spend all our energy learning about this particular application, will the knowledge transfer to other applications? So here's some of the other applications. One is indoor monitoring, or monitoring of what we call built or synthetic environments. And you may be thinking about the art museum I talked about earlier. You may be thinking about monitoring office buildings to minimize energy consumption. Another possibility is manufacturing process control. We can use wireless to equip factories with new forms of monitoring whether everything is going okay in the manufacturing process. Another big area of research right now is structural monitoring, and actually either retrofitting structures such as bridges or buildings or highways with sensors, or even building the sensors right into them as they're being built. And this is happening more and more with new buildings. Obviously, public safety is very important. We've talked about monitoring for release of hazardous plumes, of chemicals or other vapors, nuclear releases or leaks of radioactive material. And another area that you're going to see a lot of attention paid to, a lot of research effort, is in healthcare. And this includes things called bands or body area networks that a lot of people are working with here, as well as in Europe or Japan. And this is primarily due to the fact that most of these countries have aging populations, and there's a huge emphasis on trying to provide quality health care at a minimum cost. And so I believe that the environmental monitoring application is useful to look at in terms of understanding new opportunities for wireless sensor networks. And the reason is that the fundamental challenge in all of these is that the sensor network really needs to report what we think of as meaningful change. Now, it needs to report that meaningful change to whomever and whatever needs it. It needs to do it when it is needed. It doesn't do any good if it comes too late, and at minimum cost. And that minimum cost could be life cycle cost, which is a good way to look at, which includes the cost of providing energy over the lifetime of that system. If we think about wireless sensor networks, they are a good application of mesh networking, and I've talked a little bit about that. And we can think of wireless sensor networks as being a sort of early version of ubiquitous mesh networks. And these could be scattered all over, and they really are thinking about connecting people and things and really providing a distributed set of eyes and ears for the internet. And one of the things we want to talk about here is, what are the pros and cons of this kind of vision for the next several decades? And we always want to think of this in terms of the fact that all technologies are double-edged swords. And you can probably think about the usual technology that's trotted out as an example is nuclear energy, which originally was thought to be able to provide power so cheap it didn't even need to be metered. But obviously, it also, nuclear fission and fusion also can be used for weapons as well. But there are many other examples. And I'll get into that in a little bit, but if we go back to this idea of wireless networking and making it ubiquitous and universal, what are some of the issues? Well, one thing that we always want to think about when we're communicating information is security. And the idea here of security is a form of protection. And we want to protect the data from unauthorized actions. And those actions could include alteration or destruction of data. And of course, you care about that a lot if it's your data. Another thing is privacy. And privacy is about control. Do you have control over who can collect information about you or about your environment? Maybe the sense you have a sensor network in your home. So we care about who can collect it, how they might use it, and what they will use it for. And this is very important, because I'm a firm believer in unintended consequences. Let's look at an example. The ARPANET, which was the progenitor of today's internet, was developed in the late 1960s and came online in the early 70s. And it connected about a dozen universities around the U.S. with a packet switched network, and it was very exciting. And one of the very first applications was email. And I can promise you that the people that envisioned email and what a wonderful thing it would be never imagined that we would have to be spending so much time and energy dealing with spam and viruses that spread via email. So as I said, all these technologies are double-edged swords, and with wireless sensor networks and the future of a mesh-connected society, we need to, as engineers and technologists, to think hard about unintended consequences. And I think this is probably a good place to stop with Module 2 and ask you to think about looking forward into the future. What are the opportunities and what are the risks and challenges to developing this kind of technology? In this module, we discussed wireless sensor networks from the point of view of systems engineering, and we hit a couple aspects of it in a fair amount of detail. One was networking. Secondly, we talked about time and how, because they are an embedded type of system, wireless sensor networks need to be thinking about aspects such as latency and throughput. We also talked about how computation plays a role in wireless sensor networks. And then we talked about how we are trying to go from data to knowledge and how wireless sensor networks then become part of a larger system having to do with analysis, visualization, and inference of models and data. Then we also talked a little bit about various dimensions of quantifying the design of wireless sensor networks. And a couple of those were financial aspects. Link power budgets are just link budgets. And energy budgeting. And all of these are important not only for the application that we're talking about, which was environmental and ecosystem sensing, but for other applications as well. And then we talked about how you can generalize from not just sensor network applications to the idea of a mesh-connected society of people and intelligent things. And the theme that we want to try to relate, of course, throughout the class is understanding complex engineered systems using the example of wireless sensor networks.